Hello, everybody. Cal Banyan here with Cal Banyan's Hypnosis, Etc. with Meredith Locker. If you're watching this anywhere else except calbanyan.com, then you need to go there right now, because right below this video is all the links and resource information and perhaps some graphics that'll make this program more valuable to you. Besides, did you know on calbanyan.com we have over 100 videos like this? A wide variety of topics are covered. You really want to go there. Become a VIP member, and you'll have instant access to all of them. It doesn't cost nothing. It's all free. All right, let me tell you about Meredith Locker, my co-star, my teammate. She is originally a talk therapist. She has a master's degree in psychology. Her business, her practice, is in Los Angeles, and she got completely converted over to hypnosis, and now she's a Hypno 1 percenter, one of the best of the best, and that's why I'm proud to have her on the show. If I had anyone, a friend, a loved one of mine, that was going to see a hypnotherapist in the Los Angeles area, she would be definitely the one I would be most confident, happiest to refer them to. How you doing, Meredith?
I'm great, Cal. Thank you so much. And I am only a one percenter because of you. I don't know if you guys know who Cal Banyan really is, but he is the reason that I am able to affect such change in people's lives. I'm forever grateful for the development of Five Path and Seventh Path Self-Hypnosis, and for the books that he's written and all that he does. Celeste Hackett and I have decided that you must have a twin, Cal, because of the amount of things that you get done. I mean, it's just not humanly possible. Well, I guess you do have a Maureen, but you are so amazing, the kinds of things that you are always able to explore and implement and get done, and all of the training that you do, and I just want to thank you. If you're looking for a hypnotherapist in anywhere, really, you know, you want to come and see Cal in Tustin. He's an amazing, the most amazing hypnotherapist as you could possibly find. And if I wanted to send a family member or a loved one for hypnosis, I would send them to you, Cal.
Why, thank you. You know, since I moved out here to California, I'm kind of becoming the hypnotist to the stars and the celebrities and the rock and rollers and the infamous from around the world. I actually have people these rich and wealthy, they hear about me from other countries and they fly in, and I'm really honored to be able to work with people, because people who are in, have high visibility, have a lot of influence, and they can really help other people to seriously consider seeing a properly trained and experienced hypnotherapist.
I couldn't agree more. Being in LA, I'm getting in with all these actors, and it's just a potpourri of hypnosis fun.
Hey, you know, my idea is if you can make it in Minnesota, you can make it anywhere.
Amen.
Hey, hello to all my friends in Minnesota and North Dakota. I miss you guys. All right, I got a couple of announcements. I'm going to go through them record time. Let's see. We've got the Week of Power. That's the second week of November. What is it? It's take your practice to the next level. It's about skills and confidence building. Become a five-pather, a seven-pather, and it's going to rock your world. Check our schedule, because we're putting all of our classes together for next year. There's always discounts for early enrollments. So on this site and hypnosiscenter.com, you're going to be able to check our schedule for all of next year. Big announcement. Speaking of next year, I'm going to Malaysia and Singapore. Been invited there. I'm going to be teaching the Ultimate Recognitions, which is part of the self-hypnosis process we call Seventh Path. And in Malaysia, I'm doing the full-blown NGH-approved Banyan Hypnosis and Hypnotherapy Certification Super Course there. It's going to be fun. I know people are signing up from all over the Asia-Pacific area, including Australia and throughout the Southeast Asia. It's just going to be a great time. Please fan us and follow us on Twitter. And also, this show has a fan page on the Facebook.com website. Just go to Facebook.com/hypnosis etc. That's HYPNOSISETC. And very soon we're going to do our that's our pseudo-faux case histories with celebrities. What we're going to do is we're going to take people who are famous, either from history or in present time, and do and talk about, gosh, with their background, what would their hypnotherapy process look like? And let us know who you think would be interesting to work with. And that would be by letting us know in the comments area of calbanion.com. Or you could also leave us a message on the facebook.com/hypnosis, etc. fan page. And that's it for now. Now, Meredith, if I remember from last session, we were just kind of leaving off. I got some notes here. We're talking about symptom-producing events and ISEs, and you're going to talk a little bit about that and then just proceed on with, and maybe, I don't know, if the stars are aligning right, we might actually end the series in this episode. Let's give it a try.
Great. Well, yes, I want to remind everybody, as we did discuss in last session, that it's usual, in fact, most usual, for the ISE, the initial sensitizing event, that is the event that really caused it all, where the initial fear or sadness was created and the initial misperception lives, that usually has nothing to do with food. And that's really important to remember when you're working with eating disorders, because that might kind of take you aback and you might actually think you're in the wrong place and keep trying to push to something earlier that doesn't exist. And in fact, it's more common that the initial sensitizing event has nothing to do with whatever they're coming into you for. And this isn't just about eating disorders, it's about anything. But it is very important that you realize that there is a symptom-producing event, the SPE, that occurs sometime later. And so what usually happens is, in your pre-hypnosis interview, you would ask the client when they believe the problem started. And most of the time, that is the symptom-producing event. Then when you're going through age regression, which if you're a five-pather, you know that it is phase two of the five-path, which is an advanced systematic approach to resolve pretty much any issue, you're going to use age regression. And as a part of that, you are going to ultimately find the SPE as you go back. And if you don't, for some reason, as you go back towards the adult, so you're going, starting out at, you know, you get them into the chair and then you regress them on the feeling that you bring up. And this is very much in a nutshell here. So if you want to learn more about five path and age regression, I'm going to have Kel tell you in a moment where to do that. But you're going to start out regressing them younger, going younger, and you're going to get to the initial sensitizing event. If you somewhere on the way down got to the SPE and, you know, it matches or doesn't match what the client said, no problem. That's what you're going to work with. But if you didn't get to something that seems like the SPE, as you bring them back up, resolving the ISE, resolving SSEs, you're going to bring them to that time that in the pre-hypnosis interview they discussed as being what they believe to be the cause of the problem. And you're going to help to bring that insight that they had in the work with the initial sensitizing event into the subsequent, the symptom-producing event. How did I do with that, Cal?
That was great, except if I had to listen to that again, I'd have to get on my iPhone and it'll play it back at half speed, and then it would all sink in, because that was a lot of information really, really fast.
Yes. So if you all can slow that down a little bit, I am a fast talker and I do try to get as much information in as possible.
That comes in handy if you're going to do those speed inductions.
Yes. Any induction for me is a speed induction, Cal. What are you talking about?
That's right. You could do a whole progressive relaxation in 3.5 minutes.
Exactly. So it's just key. I mean, if you don't learn anything else from this series on eating disorders, that you understand that the initial sensitizing event will most likely have nothing to do with food, that there will be a later event in their life that's the subsequent, because that's the subsequent sensitizing events, which you will find on your way down in the age regression process. And you want to be sure to work through the symptom-producing event on your way back up, because that is the time when they attached food and whatever their issue is with food to the feeling inside that they didn't like and created the actual problem. Good?
Perfecto.
Good. So let me get into just a few more issues that might come up for you as you work with clients with eating disorders or things that you might want to be aware of or think about. It's important to know that eating disorders aren't always about looks or weight. For a lot of people, it has nothing to do. They don't really care about their weight or they don't really care about how they look. It has nothing to do with that at all. And that's kind of a generally held misperception out there. And I want to make sure that as somebody who might work with somebody like that, that you don't just make that assumption. It's important, though, not to put a lot of emphasis on looks and weight in talking with, you know, people with eating disorders. I try to avoid making comments like, oh, wow, you look really good today, in general, because I'm trying to kind of focus my attention and focus the client's attention on other aspects of themselves, such as their intelligence and creativity and, you know, their abilities to make their, you know, passions come into fruition and things like that. So I try to just get off of looks altogether. And I know that there is a common tendency of people out there to want to tell somebody who has an eating disorder, you know, I don't understand why you do this to yourself. You're so beautiful. And it really has nothing to do with that. So just avoid any talk about, looks. Even really, you know, I don't like to get into the food a whole lot either. You know, when I'm working with somebody with weight loss, I will get into talking about food and what it is that they do. But with eating disorders, unless I just need to know what their behaviors are, I try to avoid the subject of food and leave that to the dietitians, the nutritionists, people like that, the experts. Because believe me, that person needs the expert, instead of somebody who's not fully formally trained in working with nutrition and food matters. You do want to be very aware that sometimes you will have clients who have eating disorders who will come in for weight loss. And so you'll go through the whole process and then they'll come into your office and you'll see that maybe they're either normal weight or way too thin. And this is going to be a judgment call on your case. And you are going to have to, you know, identify whether, you know, you're going to go ahead and proceed in working with this client. Now, if there's some particular reason and they seem to be healthy in the way that they're thinking and you want to go ahead with helping them to achieve that goal, that's up to you. But it's just important to understand that there can be some use of us as tools by anorexics to try to get thinner. So that can come up for you. As far as working with clients in the emotional realm, you know, any of our clients can be kind of stuffed up emotionally. In fact, that's usually what they are and usually why they come to us. And most of us who work with 5-PATH, which is this 5-phased advanced system to resolve any issue, we also know about the secret language of feelings. And if you work with the secret language of feelings, you know that most people are dealing with issues that are just distractors, distracting from their feelings. And most people are not taught what their feelings are for, and they don't know how to work with their feelings. And so these clients, just like any other client, they're going to have kind of a jumbled mess of feelings, and part of what we're all about is working it out. But what I find with eating disorders is that they can be even less likely to want to talk about feelings and reveal feelings. And so, you know, just be prepared for that, especially anger. Much more likely to be willing to expose fear and sadness, but anger can be problematic. And so phase 3 in 5-PATH is forgiveness of others, where we work through feelings of anger about other people in their life. And especially for the female clients, it can be a little bit more challenging with this particular population, and this isn't always the case, but to get them to express their anger and to want to work through that. So I'm just telling you this to keep this in mind so that you can be prepared to really help them to, you know, pump that out, to let that out and to bring it up. And you may need to really extra be prepared with information from the age regression session so that you can remind them of things that happened to them so that they can bring that anger up. You help them to bring that anger up. Anything to add to that, Cal?
Why do you think it's more difficult for women to do the anger?
Not women in general, but women with eating disorders tend to be people pleasers. And it tends not to be a facet of being a people pleaser to allow your anger to show. It's considered impolite, if you will, in most of the circles that I work with in general. And of course, this is a generalization. This is not the rule. And this is just something that I do tend to find in a significant percentage of the people that I work with that have eating disorders.
very interesting.
But no problem. I mean, we're used to that, right? I mean, if we've been doing hypnosis, there are lots of people who are stuffed up with their feelings and lots of people who have trouble revealing their anger. And so we're used to being the coach and getting that out of there. As far as phase four, forgiveness of self in Five Path, it's really, really imperative that you, you know, really work this phase with these clients because there is so much shame and guilt, particularly with eating disorders. And so it's just, you know, it's always a pivotal phase. I find it to be so powerful with everybody, but particularly with eating disorders. Forgiving themselves is just imperative to be able to fully heal and to, for, you know, to move on, to allow the healing in themselves to take place. Now, as far as when I work with people with eating disorders, I really screen when I first get the call as far as the commitment to recovery, because, you know, I'm really not going to waste a person's time or money or my time working with somebody that is just doing it because someone's telling them to do it. It's just not worth it for me. And so I do try to do the best I can to assess whether they have a sufficient level of motivation, you know, to work with the client. I'm clear, like any other treatment, that there are no guarantees. So that's always the case. I get a doctor's referral. As I talked about in a previous segment, it's imperative with eating disorders that you get a doctor's referral just to make sure that you have, you know, somebody else with their license stating that they believe hypnosis is safe for the client and certainly not going to harm the client. All of those kinds of things. And I say that because there are lots of health issues involved with people with eating disorders. Heart attacks are a, you know, probably the most fatal amongst other things, but heart attacks are definitely a possibility because of the imbalance in the chemistry that comes from restricting food or from binging and purging. Once I have the client in my office, I really focus on building the rapport. Trust is so important with this particular population, and you know, it's mostly a matter of just listening and then sharing back to them what it is that they said to you so that they know that you understand. And even though we, you know, Cal teaches, and if you've listened to other podcasts, you've probably heard that, you know, it's not a matter particularly of believing what the clients say because the client doesn't actually know what the cause of the problem is. That will be revealed in age regression. But it is important to listen to what the client has to say and, you know, process the pre-talk and process the pre-hypnosis interview properly so that you can build that rapport. That is what that really is all about, amongst getting, you know, the other factors of getting information that you'll need for direct suggestion and other things. I will say that for those of you who have some sort of challenge with your weight, I'm going to say to you that it may be a challenge for you to work with this population because they are very weight focused. Not all of them, but a significant portion are very looks and weight focused. That's part of kind of their obsession. And so if you are significantly overweight as a hypnotherapist, I would not be surprised if they have trouble trusting you and trusting in your ability to help them. And I certainly don't say that to hurt anybody's feelings. I just say that because it's what I hear to be true. I'm constantly told by clients that, you know, just the fact that I'm not overweight alone goes a long way to helping them to understand that I'm not going to lead them into the wrong direction.
There's one thing better, though. It's better to have been fat and then taken care of it. You can say, I did it in part with hypnosis.
I couldn't agree more. Absolutely.
So thank God I was fat.
I thank God for that too, Cal. I love it. And I myself, I mean, I don't know anyone who hasn't, well, I do. I know two people, maybe, that haven't had some sort of struggle with their weight. I think most people these days do struggle with their weight and, you know, how to maintain proper weight. And I've had the same experience. And so I certainly come from that same level of understanding. Having a thorough pre-talk is always important, but with eating disorders, in some ways, it's even more important. People with eating disorders tend to be doing the behavior because they feel out of control. And now, the cause of them feeling out of control varies widely, but ultimately, something happened to make them feel fearful, feel out of control in the world, and so then they're trying to control their body and trying to control their food intake. That's Once again, not always the case, but generally speaking, tends to be the case. And so if they don't feel that they're to some extent in control of this, you know, whole therapeutic process with hypnosis, then they're certainly not going to be as good of a candidate, and you won't be as successful. So, you know, like anyone, you want to resolve the misperceptions about hypnosis, the fears about hypnosis, in order to be successful. I avoid food talk. I really try to avoid getting into the nitty-gritty of talking about food with them and try to keep that to the dietitian. If they come in with particular food plans that they have, meal plans or the like, I will work with that in direct suggestion, but that has to come from someone else other than me. Because I'm certainly not going to create a food plan for them, since I'm not a dietitian or a nutritionist. With eating disorder clients, because food is a daily issue, just like I would deal with a smoker or someone who has a substance abuse problem, I try to get the first two sessions very close together, maybe even only one day apart. So I would see a first session on a Monday, and then skip a day, and then on a Wednesday I would see them for a second session. And with eating disorders, I follow the same protocol. You know, I try even the first session to get into age regression, because I know that age regression is going to be so much more powerful at resolving this issue than just traditional direct suggestion work alone. In fact, direct suggestion work alone is not particularly successful with eating disorders in any way, shape, or form, in my experience. I also try to do informing soul technique with these clients as much as possible. Informing soul technique is a technique that Cal developed, and there will be more information below if you're watching this on calbanion.com, but essentially it's a taking of the client to between lives before coming into this body. And now this client would have to have a belief in being, you know, existing prior to coming into physical form, and so I do my work ahead of time to find out that they are open to that kind of thing and get a little bit of information about their belief system so I can work within it. But I find it to be so powerful with these clients, because, you know, these behaviors are so ingrained in them. But if they can really step back and see the big picture of things and get a feel for their purpose and get a feel for, I mean, gosh, how it feels to be vast and feel completely loved and lovable and all of that that tends to come from the informing soul technique process, you know, it's just so powerful for these particular clients, amongst others. You know, finding out, the, you know, maybe even some of the reasons for the challenge, because sometimes that information comes to light. Do you have anything to add to that, Cal?
Yeah, one of the things I want to say is, you know, I'm not the very first person to ever use hypnosis to do in-between life work, but the informing soul technique, the way that I've put it together, the main differences are that, you know, we don't do any past life regression work in the informing soul technique. We just go right to that in-between life phase. And it's a very disciplined, refined kind of work that involves, we really are very careful to not lead the client or demand that they have certain kinds of experiences. I know that some schools of thought who do this kind of work, they have them go through a particular process that exists in the hypnotherapist's mind, like they're going to go to the hall of this and the meeting room of that, you know, and all these constructs that school of thought has that the person is supposed to experience in between life. We don't do any kind of leading like that. And it is designed to be merged with the age regression and process. It is a variation of the informed child technique, but instead of the adult doing the informing, the soul, who knows why they're coming into this life, does the informing. So I just want to edify that.
Beautiful. Well, Cal, that's all I have to share about eating disorders. Are there any other questions or any other issues that you wanted to bring up?
I'm kind of interested in secondary gain issues. How frequently does that come up?
In my experience with eating disorders, about 50% of the time.
That's right. And the thing is, and even in talk therapy, secondary gain is something that's really difficult to work with. And most hypnotists have no clue how to work with it. And Meredith, you could kind of give really a quick thumbnail sketch of what secondary gain is and maybe your hypothesis about why it comes up so frequently in eating disordered clients.
Yeah, and it would have to be a hypothesis because, you know, honestly, your guess is as good as mine. But essentially, secondary gain is some sort of side benefit, additional benefit that comes from the behavior. And it would be a reason that the client would want to hold on to the behavior as opposed to letting it go. And so with 5-PATH, we save this for the fifth phase, which, by the way, isn't always the fifth session. You know, it could easily be the eighth session or the 25th session, although it's usually somewhere closer to the fifth to the eighth session for me. But it's something where we're going to work with that part of them that wants to hold on to the disorder and help to resolve that issue for them, help to find other ways to meet those needs other than the eating disorder. And I find that, you know, for the most part, the secondary gain comes from, you know, family kinds of issues. And so I think that because people feel that they need their family's acceptance and they, you know, family is important to us. And so, you know, because of that, my hypothesis would be that, it's about feeling like we fit into our family and wanting to keep that going. What do you see?
Yeah, and I also find that especially in teens, having an issue like this and going from therapist to therapist and stuff like that can really have a lot of secondary gain because they can gain a lot of attention and a lot of control in the family because of it. And sometimes really the only way out with adolescents and teenagers that have this problem is to recruit at least one of the important people in the family, if it's a mother-father type family, then at least one of them into the process of going through the hypnotherapy themselves. Because especially in kids and teenagers, a lot of times the problem doesn't exist in the kid or the teenager, but it exists in the home, and we have to go in and make a significant difference in the home. And I will sometimes ask the parents, you know, I have kind of a sneaky way of doing this is in front of the client, I might say something like, well, I can really tell you really care about your son or daughter and you do anything to help them out. Isn't that right? Yes. And I'll get that yes response and I'll say, then certainly you'd be willing to go through this process too. And I will try to recruit, if it's an adolescent or a teenager, at least one or both of the parents or caregivers or guardians into doing the process also. Creates a healthier home environment.
Yep, and you can even find with adults who have almost kind of gone into the eating disorder culture, if you will, and because of years of treatment, maybe all of their friends also have eating disorders, and that's become such a big part of their life that it feels like they're losing their friends and kind of losing their identity by giving up the eating disorder. So I find that gets them, you know, it becomes a factor as well. And then there are also...
That's such a good point. I just want to interrupt it. We see this in a lot of different kinds of situations, like working with people who abuse alcohol or abuse drugs, dual diagnosis situations where they become part of that community, and if they get well, they lose that social environment. And one of the ways we can do that in the phase five process where we deal with that is to reframe that really their new job is to be an example to that group that there is a way out and that they can change.
Yes, I agree completely. And, you know, when you work with athletes, there's often a coach involved, you know, that they want this coach's respect, and especially with gymnasts, that kind of thing, even running coaches, dancing teachers or coaches, you know, where they might be disrespected or they might even have to leave the profession if they gain weight, that kind of thing. So there are quite a few cases, you know, that you will find secondary gain issues with eating disorders. I'd say more so with eating disorders than the norm.
Thank God for plus size models. That's all I can say.
I agree.
All right. Well, you want to wrap it up then?
Yeah, I do. My name is Meredith Locker, and thank you so much for tuning in. This has been really exciting to get to share this information with you. If you do have some questions that come up as a result of this series, please do send them to me. My email address is meredith@yourpathhypnosis.com, and I look forward to getting your comments and questions in the future and continuing to bring you great information. So definitely keep signing in, and I am signing out.
All right. Thank you, Meredith. This is Cal Banyan, and I want you to visit our websites, hypnosiscenter.com. That's where I have all my training schedule. I got articles, just huge websites like Disneyland. You can't visit it all in one day. And then there's hypnosis.org. Much, much, much cool stuff to do there as well, including a free hypnosis directory that you can put your practice in and, you know, maybe get some more visitors. And then our HypnoSpace, which is our community of hypnosis practitioners. It's worldwide. Get in on the conversation. You can blog. You can post photos, videos, all that kind of stuff. And by the way, I'm limiting the number of people that can be part that can email me with regard to the secret project that I have. Get slimmer yourself, walk the walk, learn something you can do very special for your clients to help them become slimmer, also healthier, stronger, and also add wealth to your life. And just email me at calbanyan@hypnosiscenter.com and I'll spill the beans. But do it early each week because of Busy. I'm limiting it to 5 people now per week. All right, that's it. Cal Banyan, signing off. This recording is the property of Cal Banyan and Cal Banyan's Banyan Publishing Incorporated. All rights reserved, for private use only, may not be duplicated without written permission.